Shrink Wrap Radio number 566, celebrating Shrink Wrap Radio's 12th birthday with Jerry Trumbull.
Shrink Wrap Radio. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make it dangerous. It's all in your head. And now here's your host, Dr. Dave.
Today, my guest is my longtime friend, Jerry Trumbull. We'll be discussing the evolution of Shrink Wrap Radio as a way to honor the 12th anniversary of the show. For more information about Jerry Trumbull, please see our show notes at shrinkwrapradio.com. Now, here's the interview. Hey, Jerry Trumbull, welcome back to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, there he is in person, Dr.
Yes,
Dave.
Indeed. Yes, indeed. Yay.
It's been quite a while. Good to see you, my friend.
Yeah, likewise. We've been talking a lot on the phone, but
yes,
normally not using video because we kind of know what each other look like. But still, it's good to see you.
Yeah, so I feel the same.
Yeah. We're here to celebrate, to have you help me celebrate Shrink Wrap Radio because it's in the 12th year now. Today, this very day, is the 12th year anniversary.
That is amazing when you think about it. It's part of my new time warp theory. I feel like I'm in a time warp. I don't know if you feel the same way or not, but time is going by so fast now, I can't keep track of it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And it was important to me to have you be here to help me celebrate this because you've been with me along this whole ride, kind of encouraging me when it was a gleam in my eye still to actualize it. And then I think you have been on the show something like around 22 times. I went back through and I was looking at that. And it's kind of a synchronicity that today is the exact date of the anniversary, which the first show was on August 22nd, 2005.
Wow.
And I would not have noted that. I wasn't planning to do a 12-year anniversary show. But I got an email from my friend and super fan in Tehran, Iran, Mahiar.
Wow, and fantastic.
Telling me, I'll actually include his email when I put up the podcast. It was very flattering and just reminding me of, hey, this is going to be your 12th anniversary. Now, he said, I got that email, not today, clearly, but several days ago. And I had an interview scheduled today with someone else who had to back out. So I was going to be talking about a new therapeutic technique. It was new to me. That will happen next week. So that's why it feels kind of synchronicity that, you know, that it's kind of come together to do this.
And, Excellent, yes.
Yeah. So
if synchronicity doesn't exist, we will force it to exist.
Okay. I'm persuaded that it does exist. There's just too many magical things that happen and that have happened in my life and your life.
Our
mutual lives, yeah.
I agree to some extent. I'm not as sold as you are. I pretty much agree. It's kind of like, if I may slightly deviate from the topic here, it's kind of like the eclipse of the sun that we saw yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't know if you had any of it in California where you are, but here in Denver we had a 99%. And the amazing thing about the eclipse is that the moon happens to be exactly the right size and distance away to totally block the sun when it gets in front of it. And it's just amazing to me that it's exactly the right size. I mean, it could have been a lot bigger or smaller and it wouldn't have had the same effect at all. But at this location and this distance from the moon, it's exactly the right size disk so that when it comes in front of the sun, it blocks it.
Yeah. I never thought about that. Did you have viewing glasses?
Yeah, I did. And I went out on the front porch and I was looking up. And what happened to me was I had synchronistically run into a TED talk a couple of days in advance. And the TED talk was about the solar eclipse. And the guy was very, very enthusiastic. And he said he was told by an astronomer that this was a life-changing event and he should definitely take advantage of it and view the solar eclipse with a group of people. Well, I had a small group, just two. There were three of us on my front porch, but so it wasn't quite the same. But what happened to him when he did it with a group of people, when it actually clicked into totality, the entire group went, whoa.
Yeah.
There was a big roar that they involuntarily emitted. And
yeah,
he said,
that's great.
Yeah, he said it was just, you know, one of a kind. And it is one of a kind for sure. In fact, any given place on the planet will experience a total eclipse of the sun once in 400 years.
So, I wasn't aware of that. Aware of that. We it was overcast here. So we watched it online, and it was a good experience online. So coming back to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Yes.
And
it's not about to be eclipsed.
Yeah, right.
12 years. 12 years. Yeah, that's a long, long time. In fact, I remember when you were talking about the 500th show.
Yeah.
What is your number so far? What are you up to now?
Well, this conversation here will be number 566.
Wow.
And that doesn't include about 125 that I did for Wise Counsel podcast, which is another story. But part of the reason that you get to be here is that we were in communication when I first discovered podcasting and thought that I wanted to have a podcast and was gearing up to do it. And it was taking me a long time to get my website together and to figure out the technology and all. And you finally said, "Hey, man, time's going by. You just got to do it. Just do it."
Yeah, you were trying to get it perfect.
Yeah. And that kick in the pants turned out to be well-timed and a good thing, because then I did it and I was off and running with I had no idea about the future. I wasn't thinking that I would do 500 shows or 100 shows or two shows. I had no idea. Would there be an audience?
It's a good thing you had no idea, because if you had known what it was going to lead to, you probably would have said, "I don't think so."
This looks like a lot of work.
That's way too much work.
Yeah, really.
66 shows. Oh no.
Yeah. I think you're right.
I do remember those days quite well. I felt like I was being your personal beta tester.
You would get
a new microphone, and then I would get a phone call, and it was you saying, "Would you mind going online and listening to these two microphones I have?" And my ear is not that good, but nonetheless,
I didn't remember doing that. So that's interesting to hear.
Yeah, I said, "Yeah, I'll do it." And so you gave me a sample from each microphone.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell the difference, but you could. So I said, I just agreed with you, basically. And so you went with that model.
Yeah, well, you know what? I have lost count of how many microphones I've tried out and had. And I can't say I notice any difference between any of them, not very dramatically. And when I listen back to some of the older shows, you know, when I was obsessing about microphone, I say, "Wow, that sounds really good." Though I hadn't totally figured out my trip yet of microphone and mixer, and I tried using a mixer and I had trouble figuring it out, and then I went for a while with no mixer, and you know, my hearing isn't all that great either, but I must say that I've obsessed about microphones probably way too much. The microphone that I'm using right now is this right here. Doesn't show up very good in the picture, but that's about a $400 microphone. The one I was using before was a $69 microphone before I started using this one.
Yeah.
There's not a big noticeable difference.
Not really. At least not to my ear. And like you say, I guess if you have a practiced ear, you might be able to tell the difference. But
yeah, there are people who can tell for sure.
Yeah, my musician friends were the kind of people that would say, oh yeah, can you hear the difference between A and B? And I would go, no. And they'd throw up their hands, oh well, no sense continuing the conversation if you can't hear that difference.
Yeah.
Because they could hear it and it was either obnoxious or wonderful depending on what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
And I was going like, oh, well, you know, what can I say? Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, coming back to the evolution of the podcast, I originally started, you know, I said, well, when I first heard about podcasting and what it was, because initially I was confused. Podcast, I had an iPod.
Right.
But how would you broadcast from an iPod? It didn't have a transmitter or anything. And so then I read an article that talked about Adam Curry, who is kind of recognized. He's been called the godfather of, or the podfather of podcasting.
Yeah, I was going to ask you his name because I did remember him. He was sort of an AM radio type guy, a little bit on the obnoxious side. But nonetheless, he was hard-hitting, you know, forceful.
Yeah, yeah, and he's still podcasting, and he'll pop up in the conversation again. Yeah, so once I figured out, well, that podcasting was about recording audio and getting it on the internet, and I wondered, well, what the heck would I do? And I think I knew somebody, heard of somebody else who was doing interviews, and so I realized, hey, that would be perfect for me, you know, as a, having been trained as a therapist and having had a history as a market research person interviewing people. So I started out interviewing people I knew. I thought, well, you know, I know a lot of interesting and weird psychologists here in California. So my very first interview was with a friend from Sonoma State University, where I've been teaching. And David Sorby, and we talked about dreams, I think. Intuition, I think, is what we talked about. Well, you were on podcast number 3.
So,
So actually you were right there in that beginning group of friends. And then we did a whole bunch. I think we did maybe 3, 4, 5. We did a cluster of conversations together, and then we went through a series of blog talk. They were called Shrink Wrap Radio Live, and the idea was that by using blog talk in addition to my website, that we could take call-ins.
Right.
And so I was definitely looking forward to your sort of co-moderation with that, you know, helping me to respond to these people and all. Do you remember what happened?
No, I don't.
Not much. We didn't get the calls.
Right. That's right. Nobody picked up the phone. Okay, well.
People didn't call. I think once or twice somebody called. It didn't go terribly well, and it really just didn't fly, so I backed off of that idea. Now, I know it's worked well for some other podcasters, and I guess It works really well for AM type people who are kind of glib and who have built an audience that loves that sort of thing. And I think partly because I've got listeners all over the world and everybody's on different times, we struggled well with what time should we do this? And maybe we just didn't choose a good time that worked for enough people. But at any rate, we drifted away from that. And so I just wanted to hit different points in the evolution of the show. And I'm so glad to have you back here again to help me remember and recall.
Yeah, I used to claim correctly that I had listened to every single show. I can't make that claim anymore because I've fallen behind. So I'll have to catch up before the next time we talk so I can still make that claim because as time went on, I can tell you as a critical reviewer, you changed. You got more skilled at a deft interview, you know, how to thread your way between getting the information you're looking for and irritating the hell out of your subject. You don't want to do that, but nonetheless, you got better and better. And I was going like, wow, he's getting pretty good. And I even think I recall you took a class or two or a seminar or two to, help you get better. I think you mentioned one time there was an NPR seminar that you had, or maybe it was a webinar, I don't know, but do you remember that?
No, I don't think that's quite accurate, but I did. Okay. I had some people try to sell me on that they were going to train me and grow my audience really big.
Okay.
And that's kind of under the one of the topics I wanted to get to eventually is monetization. And
yes,
so,
indeed.
You know, we can make you into a star. Well, it turned out they really had nothing to offer, and it was kind of a ripoff.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. So I've grown wary of that. Now I did go to some podcasting conferences where people, you know, got up and talked about one thing or another, but I wouldn't say I've had any quotes training on how to interview people or anything like that. It's all just kind of sprung from
maybe it's just from your personality that you come by naturally, but you sustain the interest of the listener because you yourself seem to be quite interested.
Well, that was one of the other things that was important to me about you and our relationship around the podcasting is not only that you were listening to all of them for a long, long time, but also you gave me the feedback maybe about a year in, I don't remember exactly, saying, because at first it was kind of cut and dried. It was going to be the interview.
Yeah.
And that was it. And you said, you know, David, I think you should get more of yourself into this. I think people will be interested in you and who you are. So I had to kind of reflect on that a little bit. And so I made an effort to do that in terms of the commentary after each interview, saying a little bit more. Then eventually added another segment to the show that where I made announcements and then later added a segment where I would read emails from listeners.
Right.
And so the show gradually evolved with different chunks coming in, as well as introductory music, the jingles from Jeff Smith, this wonderful Nashville musician who I discovered at a certain point. He was working with other podcasters, and I learned about him. And so the opening jingle that opens up every show and some of the other sort of musical things that we collaborated on.
Yeah,
that
I remember.
Was another click.
I remember when that came on, and I thought, wow, this is starting to sound like a real professional show here.
Yeah.
It became, you know.
Yeah, he really upped my game, I must say. I can't afford him anymore.
Yeah, they were excellent. They were so good.
Yeah. Yeah, and let's see what else to talk about here. I've just made some notes because there's so many things to touch on that I could easily forget some of the things.
I can fill in a little bit here. Video is my thing. I have a website which has fallen into disrepair, denverdirect.tv. Mm-hmm. My thought for the internet was it was going to enable individual entrepreneurs like yourself and myself to carve out a niche from the giant world of ongoing entertainment, which is now so huge that even 24/7 of thousands of channels can't really handle it. So that was my thought. We could get started small. And we both came to the realization after a while that one of the things that we didn't have that others did have was a product, something to sell. I mean, we could sell this or that, but we really didn't have a product that we really wanted to push. And it seems that is, if you're going to build a worldwide audience, you should probably dream of selling them something so you will start to make worldwide money. And neither of us were into worldwide money, so we just said, well, no, we're doing it because we love it. That's what we told ourselves, and it's probably true, I don't know, but you can still love it and make money, but I've never hit upon a product that I wanted to sell, and I've tried. Oops, there was that mistaken phone call that we talked about earlier, and I did not move my phone.
Ah, you did not move your phone.
No, okay. So I'm sorry about that. But
yeah, well, coming back to the video part, you had for years been encouraging me, saying, "Hey, what about video? You ought to do video." And right. I said, "Nobody wants to sit around and look at a couple of talking heads, just talking about psychology." I just didn't believe that there was any point in it. Finally, as happens with many of your suggestions to me, I have to chew on them for a while. And finally, I came around to trying it. I guess I can't remember what finally pushed me over the edge to do it. And
you started kind of small with a preview. You started this idea of having a preview of the interview so that you could put up as a YouTube movie, a standalone YouTube movie. And I don't know if that built your listenership or not, but I thought it was great myself.
Well, even before that, I put up a kind of almost like a PowerPoint presentation, a static set of slides talking about Shrink Wrap Radio just as a way to try to promote it. But then about 2 years ago, I started putting up the interviews and a slice from the show, about a 3-minute excerpt, onto YouTube, and that's been growing. I'm kind of surprised, but there are over 200 people. I forget what the number is now, but over 200 people seem to download that. Plus, I put the excerpt in the regular podcast stream, so that anybody who's got the Shrink Wrap Radio app. That's another thing that totally I forgot about to talk about today. The evolution of having an app that happened many years into the process.
Yes.
And so I put the excerpt goes into the app as a preview so that people can say, oh, this is what he's going to be talking about. So video has happened and it's turned out to be a good thing. Now you mentioned making money with a product, so that opens up the whole topic of monetization.
Yes.
And when I got into this podcasting thing, I wasn't thinking about doing it for money or to make money. It was really more of a kind of my gift to the world in a way. Well, it was something that tickled my interest as a technical person, as a person with a history in science and electronics, ham radio, all of that.
Yes.
To say, hey, I'd like to get into that technology and And since I devoted my life pretty much to psychology, it made sense to have it be about psychology.
Yes.
And, yeah, so.
In fact, I must reinforce that point by saying the body of work that you built is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I am amazed by it myself.
You'll have to forgive me if I become, if I choke up from time to time. It's a new affliction I have. They call it labile emotionality. And we can go into that on another occasion. But if I start to talk about anything that affects me emotionally, then I start to choke up. And it's just... it's not something I can control. So my daughter, for example, she said, oh, well, it just makes you a bitter. Makes me a better person, according to her, if I'm a crybaby. So that's what you get now. You get me choking up every once in a while.
And in some ways, I have to agree with her. If I think back to the old you, prior to being a crybaby, you were pretty
mean.
Well, you were you were a wonderful person, but very sort of logical, rational, and not likely to talk about your inner feelings all that much. So now we can see that you care, and we can see what you care about. And so I feel good to be part of the circle.
Yeah, I'll accept that as a compliment, yes.
Good.
I did go to a bunch of different therapies, not enough apparently, but I was trying to learn, is there a way that I can, turn this off when I want to? And my therapist, who I don't know if she really... I never got the impression we were talking about the same thing, because she said, well, you have to develop some kind of a little trick. And what we developed was to go like this to stop it. And it works a little bit. I don't know why, but it does work a little bit. But at any rate, that's the way it is now. So I just go with it.
Well, we will talk about it more on another episode. We talked about that prior to this and decided that we have another topic that we want to go into. And so coming back to monetization, I went to, second or third year of the podcast, I went to a conference on podcasting. It was called the New Media Event or something like that down in L.A. And everybody was talking about monetization. I'd never heard that particular word before.
Making money.
Making money. And how they were going to make money, and doing seminars on how to make money. And that had been the farthest thing from my mind. But then, you don't want to be left out in the cold. It's like, what am I, chopped liver? So that kind of got my mind going in that direction as well, And one of the things people were doing was they were talking about putting up their podcasts in what they called walled gardens, where you had to be a paying subscriber in order to get it. I flirted with that idea, didn't do it. Advertising, of course, was another approach, which I've dabbled in a little bit. It's not brought in a huge amount of money. I joined the network. We talked about Adam Curry earlier. Adam Curry was the one who really put podcasting on the map, because he went to Steve Jobs and he said, hey, podcasting. I don't know what else he said, but he persuaded Steve Jobs to put podcasting on the iTunes as a menu item.
Right.
And boom, then it was real. And then people began to kind of gravitate towards that. So Adam Curry also, I guess part of that was he got some millions of dollars from VC people, venture capitalist people, to start a podcasting and advertising network, which I don't remember all the names that went through, but eventually it was called Podshow. And I met Adam Curry, and he invited me to be one of the first 30 people to be part of that network. And their slogan was, quit your day job.
Yeah.
Well, I was already retired, but I would not have been able to quit any day job with the income that came in. And it went through a lot of changes, and then it finally collapsed. But it was the beginning of a number of such attempts. And what's happened to podcasting is absolutely amazing. I don't have the numbers at my fingertips, but I think when I started in 2005, that was the first year that podcasting really started to happen. I think I was among the first, I don't know how many, maybe 100 or 200 or 300 people or 50, I don't know. Now it's got to be in the, I know it's well over 100,000, and it might be even bigger than that.
Yeah.
And everybody, you know, NPR has gotten into it really big, public radio. They're announcing new ones all the time. Every radio station is now, seems like they've got a podcast. Every newspaper, every magazine, they've got a podcast.
Yep. It's downright sickening is what it is. Podcasts,
well, maybe from one point of view. Everywhere you listen.
You look. Podcasts.
Well, I'm happy to have an audience, given how much competition is out there. And I have to say, it feels like I've got a core kind of loyal audience, you know.
I think you do. I've read through a lot of the comments, and I've been amazed at the report that some people give of the positive influence that you've provided with the information you give them.
Yeah,
and,
that's.
I remember we were talking about this general concept, and I started thinking, well, why couldn't you do therapeutic efforts using the same medium?
Uh-huh.
And I think you shied away from it a little bit because you didn't think it could work, although it does work now for some people. You can put
a few bucks in. It's a thing now.
It's a thing, yeah.
Yeah.
I would feel somewhat a little bit too removed from the situation if I was seeking therapy from the box to my left,
Right. Yeah, right. But for some people, it's really worked. It grew out of what's called telemedicine, and now there's telepsychotherapy or cyber psychotherapy and all kinds of names. And as you may know, I've interviewed a couple of people about that, and I'll continue to follow it. But I've been away from therapy for too long to feel like it's something that I want to do, even though I continue to be interested in it and to interview people about it.
Yeah, and it is just a different medium for something that seems to help people. In fact, recently I had a little brush with seeking that kind of therapy. I didn't end up with a therapist, so there's no story to tell, but involved a friend of mine, and he was saying, oh yeah, I have a great therapist. And so he was telling me, and he gave me her card, and I thought, well, I could at least go and talk to her, but I never did. So you don't get therapy if you don't show up.
That's right. That's a good lesson there. A lesson for the ages.
Yeah, right. It's so true. In fact, they always say that now. Especially with respect to politics, the power goes to those who show up. That's the first thing you have to do, you know. You can't stay at home and think about it. You've got to actually go there and meet with the people and get something going. So showing up
is talking about part. Politics. Yeah, talking about politics, actually, that was, you know, I mentioned I started out by doing interviews with friends, and my first non-friend podcast was to reach out to a USC professor that I read about in The New Yorker, and he was doing political research. Philip Tetlock was his name. That was episode number 19, and I looked back, and that was the when I got that, you know, I read about this guy in The New Yorker. It was an interesting research that he was doing that The New Yorker wrote up, and I thought, well, I wonder if I could find this guy on the internet and see if he'd be willing to talk to me. Well, he was, and that was one of the times that I forgot to turn on the recorder. So we did this whole big, long interview.
Happens and to then the best of us. Yeah.
Then I discovered that I had not turned on the recorder, and I had to contact him again. He was ticked.
That's terrible.
He was ticked, but I was able to persuade him to do it
really?
Again.
Yeah, oh, really?
Yeah, so we did do it again.
Yeah.
And then I wish I could say that was the last time that that happened, but I think there are at least three other occasions in which I forgot to turn on the recorder.
Yes, it's hard to believe, but I've made the same mistake a number of times myself. And the reason it's hard to believe for me is because I'm looking through a camera, and when it's recording, it's a blinking light. So if you don't see a blinking light, you're not recording. And yet,
it should be a reminder. Yeah.
I've still forgotten it on occasions, and I was forced to say, oh, well, that. I remember one time I kind of fudged the reason. You know, I didn't get a good quality recording. And that was true. I didn't get a good quality recording because I didn't get any recording. Good quality,
you know, one
or
of the,
bad quality.
One of the other ones just popped into my mind where I forgot to turn it on was with Temple Grandin, the high-functioning autistic woman, right?
Yes. I've seen her.
Yeah,
a couple of times.
Yeah, she's been on TED and had a TV series about her and so on. Just a remarkable woman. I did the whole interview. I felt like it was a major catch to get to interview her, right?
Yeah,
Did the whole interview with her, and the recorder wasn't on. I was mortified. I had to let her know that. She was pretty ticked as well, but I was able to persuade her to do it again, so that one's out there.
Yeah,
I think this was part of the other evolution is when I discovered that I could reach out to beyond my friendship circle.
Right.
That and I could reach out to authors and more to people of some stature and significance that I characterized as going after big fish.
Yes.
And, so I'm still work largely under that motif of really wanting to go after big fish, and I've been able to get a lot of big fish, ones that I didn't think I would be able to. And there are some fish that are so big, they're such whales, can't do it.
Right. Yes, I know. I know one of those whales. I won't mention the name.
Yeah, I know who you're thinking of. Yes.
Of course. Yes.
Yeah.
At any rate, you feel like you should give it a shot. All they can do is say no and try to make you feel bad, but you can shrug that off and go on to the next one. In fact, here's a good place for me to fit in my comment that I wanted to make earlier. I guess it was a couple of weeks ago I noticed that you were doing more videos, so I went to YouTube and looked at your channel on YouTube, and so I could actually see what you had done. And I was so impressed that at the end of it, I thought, wow, you know, I need to start doing that. I think I'll start my own podcast. Then I thought, no, wait a minute. I don't need that at this point in time for sure.
So there were other sort of things that evolved in the course of this, the advent of transcripts, because, you know,
Yeah, that's amazing.
People have supported the show in wonderful ways.
That's true.
Yeah, and somebody contacted me, and he said, hey, I'm training to be a transcriptionist, and let me practice. I'll transcribe a show. And then he did, and then later, maybe he did more than one, and then he said, you know, I'm on a bulletin board where other people who are becoming transcriptionists hang out, and maybe I'll put up a notice. Maybe somebody else will want to be a transcriber.
Yeah.
Well, that evolved to the point where listeners have generously volunteered to transcribe. And now a third of those 566 shows have been transcribed. Absolutely amazing. What a gift. All available to the world for free. Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite an offering, I must say.
I know. It blows me away.
It's a talent that I know I would never be able to do, but I had a friend who worked for a company that did that.
Yeah.
And she was, you know, they just sit there and it goes in their ear and it flows out their fingers and it turns into a transcript. And she was doing the O.J. Simpson trial.
Wow.
So every day she would call, I would talk to her and she'd say, oh, you got to watch it today. And then she would give me a little preview of what went on.
Oh,
and
wow.
Sure enough, and then I would watch it, and then she was right every time.
Yeah.
She got old and moved away, and I think it requires a lot of mental acuity to be able to do this.
Yeah, it does, and people tell me that it's a good experience for them because they're doing an interview that they were interested in and that they wanted to hear again and that they got it sort of at a deeper level.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and while I'm talking about the gifts that come through other people, I'm thinking of there was Ofer Zur of the Zur Institute who contacted me and was interested in making these transcripts available for CE courses, which we were able to do for a long time, and that was something I really wanted to have happen, and so that's been a great relationship to have.
Is that still ongoing, by the way?
Well, the courses are still up there, but I haven't been able to add any new courses. Adhering more strictly to APA guidelines and saying, I think the attitude is basically, these are not courses, these are interviews. So be that as it may, I still continue to hear from people how valuable they find those courses to be. And clearly the interviews have been an important resource for lots of therapists and student therapists. That's one of the things that I didn't know when I started out. I didn't know who my audience was going to be.
Right.
And I certainly didn't know that it would be other professionals. And so that's been very gratifying to hear from them, the various people, how much it's helped them in their work.
To me, it would seem like a gift to the student and the potential student, because I know when I was first starting in psychology, I didn't know what all these different areas meant. I had no idea, you know, I mean,
right.
I could take a course called child psychology, so I know what that meant. But for the most part, it was all a mystery. Your interviews are a perfect place to enter a subject, you know?
Yeah, and I've heard from students that who were kind of wandering around and kind of lost, you know, that they got inspired finally by something they heard here that gave them that direction that they were looking for. While I'm thinking of names to acknowledge, I'm remembering Oscar Stahl, who's in Stockholm, who has been a longtime listener, and he set up a dream workshop for me in Stockholm.
It's
wonderful memories that I have around that. I really had hoped that would grow. That was one idea I had. Yeah, I want to do workshops all over the place, and this will be a vehicle that will make that happen. Well, that hasn't materialized. I'm not sure why, but it just hasn't happened.
Do you still want to do that?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It seems like a lot of work to me, but I always had a dream of having you come to Denver and do a dream workshop.
Give me 10 paying people. I do want to make a little bit. I at least want the trip to pay for itself. So. But you get me 10 paying people, and that's enough to fly me okay. out. So I'll put that out there again.
That's good to know. Yeah. Not that long ago, I was in the hospital, and I mentioned that I had been on your show talking about lucid dreaming. And I couldn't believe the stream of people from within the hospital that came by to see me because they heard that I knew something about lucid dreaming.
Wow.
And I said to them, first, let me start by saying, I don't know anything about lucid dreaming. I just know what I've read and what I practice. And you can go online and listen to me talk about it. But don't think you're talking to an expert here because I'm not. It was hard to dissuade them from trying to treat me like an expert. And I didn't want that because you can get in trouble for doing that.
Yeah.
Practicing without a license or whatever they call it. But
right.
It was a measure of the need for that kind of exposure that people want to hear about it.
Sure, there's a lot of hunger out there for psychological knowledge, and that's one of the things that keeps my little enterprise here ticking along. I want to mention Matthew Dolitz in Australia, who publishes an online journal/magazine called The Neuropsychotherapist. And he reached out to me, heard Shrink Wrap Radio, and he said, hey, I want to get input from you. I want to have you involved. I'm thinking of putting together this Neuropsychotherapist magazine. Do you want to be a writer? Do you want to, and I said, well, put me on your advisory board.
There you go.
He did, and we've been in contact. Now he's starting a new journal called The Age of Robots, as well as a newsletter, got a different name, and he's made me the chair of the desk. I can't think of the right term, but kind of like the editor for psychology and society.
Yeah.
And I'm very excited about that. He puts out really great stuff. I want to acknowledge the guest blog. Oh, one of the evolutionary clicks was I started doing a monthly newsletter, and that's because another person reached out to me, Amakiel Klerk, originally from the Netherlands, but a U.S. citizen as far as I know now, who has a site called the Jung Platform, Carl Jung, the Jung Platform.
Right. Yes.
And he said, why don't we do a newsletter together? So he would kind of help handle the mechanics of the newsletter and advertise his workshops. And so that got me into doing that. And then I've had guest bloggers, Mariana Naldi. Dr. Mariana Naldi was a regular blogger for a while. Isabella Clark is regularly blogs now. Bonnie Bright and the Depth Psychology Alliance that she started, she became a strategic partner so that we do things to try to support one another. I've got social media volunteers right now. Sylvia Mendoza, very active, getting us on Twitter and Facebook and so on. Rebecca Holland, Will Smith. I've had interns. So it's all grown in so many different ways, so many unexpected ways.
So that's the beauty of it.
Where might this go? You know, people have asked me, well, what are your plans for the future? And
who knows?
Who knows? None of this was planned, actually. None of it was planned. It just kind of, somebody approaches me or I get an idea, you suggest something, and kind of the next click kind of emerges.
Right.
I guess the other thing I need to mention too, that was two rather big clicks. One is that we are on, I'm blocking on the word, the technology that lets you move a lot of data out to the world all at once. It'll come to mind.
You mean the cloud?
No. It was used for for stealing movies and so on, and making them available to people.
Streaming.
People in the audience. No, people in the audience are going crazy. If I go to my website, I can look it up real quick. Maybe I'll do that while while we're talking here. I'm not generally very good at multitasking. Yeah,
don't rely on us for anything that requires memory.
Oh yeah, right. Oh, I just clicked on the wrong button here.
Well, that's maybe perhaps it's a place to draw this wonderful celebration to a close.
No, I'm not quite ready yet, Jerry.
Not quite yet. Sorry.
I'm not quite ready.
I jumped the gun.
Yeah. Let's see here. Oh, where's my website? You would think I would I was just looking at the website just before this. Okay, get back here on camera. It will come to me. I cannot believe this. That neither one of us can think of this is pretty bizarre. Okay, now I'm on my website. And I'll go to About Dr. Dave. That's always a good place to go to discover things about yourself.
Yeah, if you forgot who you are, you can just go there and check it out.
Yeah, right.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Oh, and I just remembered, I see I had for a while I had a column on Psychology Today that was an outgrowth of the podcast. Got some good feedback there for a while. And I'm trying to see this thing that I know is here. It's funny, I'm not finding it. Well, moving along. One of the other things I wanted to touch on was, let's see, how do I get this out of my way now? to be seeing you again on camera. There you are. Getting on the Internet Archive, you know, the
Wayback Engine.
Yeah. This, you know, my guests suggested, you know, this is going to be such a wonderful resource for psychologists 100 years from now.
Yeah, for sure.
How are people 100 years from now going to find it? Well, found my way to the Internet Archive, and now everything, all the shows are on the Internet Archive. So as long as that institution stays alive, these shows
pretty amazing.
Will be available. Yeah.
The thought is just downright amazing.
Yeah,
because I don't want to go down that story, but
okay. So, to move towards wrapping it up, as you suggested.
Yes,
I was asking myself, well, where could this go in the future? And I began to think about virtual reality and augmented reality, and I'm just wondering, well, how might those technologies impact podcasting, impact what we're doing? And I don't know the answer to that. It's interesting to think about. Apple did a online demonstration recently where with augmented reality, they've got a toolkit now that can project onto a tabletop. I think you have to have goggles on.
Yes.
Or some kind of special glasses or something, a whole action scene, a whole world on a desktop.
Wow.
I don't know what that would be. Would that be like Dr. Dave, like Princess Leah? People would see me on their on their breakfast table, shimmering. So that could be.
It might be cool. I don't know. But go ahead.
We will ponder that thought together in future conversations that we have. So, Jerry, I want to thank you for your support along the way all these years.
It's been my pleasure, yes.
Yeah, and may our friendship continue on down the line. And we're going to do another podcast where we're going to talk about things medical. And yes. So, Jerry Trumbull, thanks for being my longtime friend, supporter, and guest once again on Shrink Wrap Radio.
Well, thank you, Dr. Dave. It's been my pleasure all the way along.
I hope you were able to enjoy this celebratory podcast. It seemed appropriate to invite my friend Jerry Trumbull to help me recall the journey, which in many ways was a shared one. Looking back at the video, I'm aware how sleepy Jerry looked. In fact, he shared with me just before the interview began that he had not slept well, and he had just woken from a compensatory nap to do the interview. Also, as emerged in the discussion, some medical issues were also interfering with his focus on the celebration topic. Hopefully, what came across, though, was two old friends sharing not only a journey of the past 12 years, but one with roots that go back much farther. I want to thank you all for being Shrink Wrap Radio listeners. Maybe some of you have been along for the whole 12-year ride. At any rate, it's clear to me that this journey would not have been so long without you listeners and all your words of encouragement, donations, transcripts, and dare I say it, love. By the way, the word that I was blocking on was torrent. I wanted to mention that Shrink Wrap Radio is now available via the technology known as torrents, thanks to the efforts of a couple of very dedicated listeners. I hope that Shrink Wrap Radio will continue to be of service to you as we move into the future, bringing you psychological knowledge, insight, wisdom, inspiration, and entertainment.
Dr. Dave, I'm continuously inspired and educated by your podcast. You interview such a wide variety of sophisticated and intelligent guests in such a graceful, well-orchestrated, and easy-to-listen-to way. I learn so much from listening while I make art and organize my life. I want to make sure this podcast keeps up and running and will be supporting more as I am able to in the future. I'm currently just finishing up my master's degree at Southwestern College in Santa Fe, New Mexico, studying art therapy and counseling. Just want to say thanks for the many gifts your work offers others and much appreciation. And I hope to, donate more in the future, and I encourage others to do the same. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Santa Fe graduate student. Your message is perfect for this celebration of 12 years of Shrink Wrap Radio. Your financial support and that of others has kept this train on the tracks and rolling along. I hope others will be inspired by your words to jump on board. I'm pleased to announce that we do have one new donor since the last episode, and I'll be reading an email from her as well. She is Carol A. Williams. Let me remind you that you can use the Amazon.com search widget in our right-hand sidebar to purchase more than just books. It's not for nothing that Amazon has been called the, quotes, everything store. If you'll remember to go to our site and use the widget for all your Amazon purchases, it will really help us. I know many of you probably use Amazon regularly to purchase all sorts of things. Well, if you will use the search tool in the right-hand sidebar, that widget, it will automatically add our affiliate code, and Shrink Wrap will get a small percentage of the purchase. It's just another way that you can help to support us. As you have heard me say many times, my favorite form of recreational reading tends to be listening. Listening to books on Audible.com, that is, and in the past, I've also confessed to the fact that my favorite kinds of recreational listening tends to be crime novels, suspense novels, adventure novels. You know what I mean. Well, one of my favorite authors in this genre is Robert Crace. That's spelled C-R-A-I-S. I've listened to all his novels that are available on Audible.com. And the one I'm currently listening to is Demolition Angel. And I must say, the reader does an excellent job. Now, here's part of what Wikipedia has to say about him. Robert Crace is an American author of detective fiction. Grace began his career writing scripts for television shows such as Hill Street Blues, Cagney and Lacey, Quincy, Miami Vice, and L.A. Law. His writing is influenced by Raymond Chandler, Dashiell Hammett, Ernest Hemingway, Robert B. Parker, and John Steinbeck. Those are some of my other favorite authors. And Crace has won numerous awards for his crime novels. Lee Child, another favorite author in this genre, has cited him in interviews as one of his favorite American crime writers. The novels of Robert Crace have been published in 62 countries and are bestsellers around the world. Robert Crace received the Ross MacDonald Literary Award in 2006 and was named Grand Master by the Mystery Writers of America in 2014. So I think you'll have to admit those are some pretty strong credentials. Evidently, I'm not alone in enjoying his books. Who knew? I don't even remember quite how I stumbled onto him, but I've been really happy that I did, because it's rare to find authors of his talent and magnitude. So if you're not already an Audible.com subscriber, you can get this audiobook or any of the others that he wrote or that other people have written with no obligation to continue your subscription by going to audibletrial.com/shrink. And of course, if that one's not to your taste, they've got more than 250,000 titles for you to choose from.
Hi, this is Jerry Trumbull, continuing my inner space explorations in Denver, Colorado. And you're on the couch with Dr. Dave.
Thank you, Jerry Trumbull, who joined me on the show earlier today. Now let's go to a couple of recent emails from our listener community. First, we hear from Mahiar in Tehran, who provided the impetus for today's show when he wrote, "Dear Dr. Dave, as I can tell by the date given to episode number one, Intuition, an interview with Dr. David Sorby, today is Shrink Wrap Radio's 12th birthday, or at least 12 years have passed since the first release. It's delightful beyond words to see how your work in Shrink Wrap Radio has flourished over the years and come to host such a massive body of psychological knowledge through the years. I'm afraid you've actually talked about this issue in previous shows, which I'm sorry to raise once again, but are you not the first psychological podcaster ever? I mean, isn't Shrink Wrap Radio the world's first psychology podcast?" Well, let me insert that I like to think so. I don't know if that's the case for sure, but so far nobody has brought up any counter evidence, you know, to the contrary. Getting back to Mahiar's note, he says, "In any case, you have managed to masterfully compile an outstanding body of knowledge which shall be a great source of inspiration for generations of psychologists to come. I sometimes wonder what it would be if there was a Dr. Dave's 100 years ago and we could have such interviews from the old masters of our field." I'm sure many people will be more than grateful to refer to your work in years to come. Imagine people listening to you in 300 years' time. How lucky they would be to have a Dr. Dave in their history. I'm so proud of you. Keep up the great work. Always yours, Mahiar." Well, Mahiar, what a gift you are to me. Thank you so much for your ongoing encouragement and friendship. And next we hear from new donor Carol A. Williams, who writes, "Good morning, Dr. Dave. You are more than welcome. I'm a marriage family therapist intern gaining hours and listening to podcasts on my commute. Shrink Wrap Radio is by far one of the highest quality podcasts in our industry out there. This is not to take away from the work that many others are doing and my appreciation for their contributions. It's the depth you and your guests bring, and as a growing clinician, I appreciate those places in which I can be increasingly challenged to grow myself. The only downside to listening is the growing stack of books I've purchased that are by your guests. Yes, I would be happy to make a recording, and we'll try to get it done in the next week or two. Again, thank you for your commitment and the gift of your experience. And again, that's from Carol Williams, a marriage and family therapist intern. So Carol, thank you so much for your encouraging words, and I'm really looking forward to receiving that audio, and all the best to you in your continuing studies. So with that, I think we'll wrap it up once again for today. As always, you can send your emails to shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com, and you can leave comments about individual shows in the comments area on the site. And you can leave voicemail on our message phone at 415-830-4014, as well as using our app for that. Thanks to my old friend Jerry Trumbull for joining me today to help celebrate the 12th anniversary of Shrink Wrap Radio. My next guest will be Dr. Stephen R. Vasquez, therapist and author. We'll be discussing the therapeutic approach he's developed, known as Emotional Transformation Therapy, or ETT for short. So I hope you'll join us. Until next time, this is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
You've been shrink-wrapped by Dr. Dave. All the psychology you need to know, and just enough to make you dangerous.